Guys, I want to thank you for inviting me. It is always great to come to Houston. I was at Cat Springs with you 5 years ago, and I was at Pine Lodge 2.5 years ago. And I am always blessed in preparing to come and coming and being with you guys. A lot of familiar faces, a lot of old friends. I mean, I've been hanging with you guys now for at least 10 years. So when I say old friends, I think we can fit into that category. My biggest news since I was with you 2.5 years ago, if you were there at that retreat, and a bunch of you were, I recognize a bunch of you, you might recall that my last talk on Saturday, I talked about suffering. Well, the Lord had a lot more to teach me on that topic. It was just 6 months later that I had a major back spasm. I went into sciatic nerve pain for 19 months, and it was uncategorically the worst pain, physical pain I've ever had. It hurt for me to sit down in a chair. It was really tough, and it was every day it was pain, and some days it was excruciating. This past May, God delivered me from that. I am pain-free, incredibly thankful for that. But like so many of you, continuing to learn just about the tough things of life, and talking with Rathi today, we're just saying how when you come through a time like that, you look back on it and you say, I wouldn't trade it. But when you're in it, man, it hurts. It's tough. So you guys who are in a tough place right now, I empathize, and I hope you get out soon. But know that God is with you in it. He sure was with me. I want to kick off our time tonight by sharing my story. It's going to really tee up what I want to get into tomorrow. I am living in Atlanta, and I've been there for 30 years, but I grew up in New York. I moved around a lot. I had 5 major moves by the time I was 10 years old, but I grew up in a small town outside of New York City called Rye, New York. A really idyllic little town. From a traditional family, I'm the 2nd of 4. Dad went to work, worked in the big company. Mom stayed at home, took care of us, sent us off to school with a lunch, was always there when we came home. Growing up, I was a very shy, introverted, self-conscious kid, and I'd say those are still 3 pretty good descriptions of me. I just hide it a little bit better. Growing up, I really identify with Chad talking about 2 lives. That was me too. Probably most of us in the room can identify with that. Growing up, the way I would describe it, one was compliant, a compliant life, kind of my public life, and the other was this hidden secret life. My public life, I could dress it up pretty good. I was a good kid in general, from a good family, growing up in a great small town. Family went to church, is pretty meaningless to me, but we went, we sat in the front row, we thought we were special and fantastic. I was a good student, didn't get straight A's, but A's and B's. Sports, I love playing baseball, love playing golf, pretty good golfer as well, but soccer was really probably where I excelled the most in high school. And my senior year, they named me the co-captain of the team. We went to the New York State Championship game. And that was an especially big deal for me because growing up, I was weak physically. I was a late bloomer. My coach gave me the nicknames Gumby and Praying Mantis was my name. I was a beanpole. But he said I was his most strategic player, and he was a brilliant coach, and he coached me well, and I learned the game, and I was able to excel. So that was really awesome. So that was my public life, but the hidden rebellious life, the way I would summarize that was just the feelings going on inside of me, some awful feelings. Guilt and shame, fear, hurt and anger, and loneliness, I'd say are the things that really captured my life when I was growing up. So let me tell you a little bit about those. The guilt and shame, the main place where that came from was pornography. I discovered my dad's porn collection when I was about 12 years old, and it opened up this hidden world for me. It just captivated me. And it drew me in. I was already, you know, lust was already a part of my life as a preteen, but man, it's like gasoline got poured on the fire. And my thought life just went there, and I just started to obsess with this stuff. I couldn't get enough of these pictures, the things I was reading. And before I knew it, I was thinking about things, having desires that I knew were wrong, that were shameful. And if anyone knew what was going on in this mind, wow, that would be bad news for me. So and I would act on it, you know, the way most of us do as guys. And and just all of the lust and acting on it. It was just a lot of guilt came with that. My fear was certainly about being discovered, that part of my life being discovered. Also just fear of rejection. I was a late bloomer, as I said, and I was very self-conscious and shy, and like most, you know, young people, wanted to fit in, and just being afraid of not fitting in with the crowd. Also, I was bullied in school. I was really weak, and I just got pushed around a lot. It wasn't really bad, but I just had fear going to school that I was going to get slammed in the locker, that the bully was going to come up and demand my lunch money, you know, stuff like that. And then I was afraid of the dark. I remember my bedroom at our house was downstairs. I was afraid to go to bed at night because it was dark down there, and I thought that there was a murderer in my closet or under the bed. And these things would just haunt me. Even, you know, when I was 16, 17 years old, these things were going on in my mind. So there was a lot of fear. And then the hurt and anger. That came mainly out of my relationship with my dad. My dad, growing up, he was my role model. And he was a tremendous athlete, a great businessman. He was a great student when he was growing up. But the thing with Dad was he was also a perfectionist, and he wanted me to be perfect. And so performance was very much a part of my life. And no matter what I did, it wasn't enough. There always had to be more. Classic story, I could never get straight A's, was always shooting for that. The best report card I ever got was all A's and one B. Couldn't wait for Dad to see that card. And he came home in the kitchen in his suit, gave him the report card. He looked at it and saw the B. He said, "What happened in this class?" Man, I'm just hearing condemnation, failure, you blew it, you suck, you're worthless, right? These are the messages coming into me. And with that, I know, you know, Dad, he was trying to motivate me as best as he could and to spur me on to be everything that I could be, but that's not what this brain was hearing. And so the hurt was strong, and just as I grew up, that started to evolve into anger towards my dad. And we didn't talk about stuff. Dad was a very stoic German kind of a guy. We didn't talk about things. There wasn't relationship, and that's what I really craved with my dad. I wanted relationship with Dad. I wanted Dad to care about me, to want to know how are you, what's going on, and it was never there. So the anger really started to come up, and one of the ways that I reacted to that was I just went pell-mell into the party life, just like you, Chad. And it started with, you know, with drinking in 7th, 8th grade, and then started smoking pot, and that all escalated and into other recreational drugs. And the party life, to me, it was a blast. It was fun. If you weren't doing that, you were a loser. And I just went full on into the party life. So that's how I dealt with it. And that was very much where that rebellion entered into. And then the loneliness. I had no one to talk to about these things. All this stuff was going on inside of me. It was a secret. Nobody knew about it. I wouldn't talk to my friends about it. How do you talk to other teenagers about stuff like this? I didn't really understand it myself. But all that loneliness was certainly inside of me. The way I dealt with all this stuff was I just tried to perform more. Just tried to gut it out, work harder, party hard, work hard. That was kind of my mantra, I'd say, that I adopted. And so I kind of pursued a whole life of performing. I went to Colgate University, a big party school. I joined a fraternity when I got there and just continued that work hard, play hard approach to life. Graduated, worked in Washington, D.C. for a couple years for an advertising agency, doing the advertising for the Marine Corps, and continuing the work hard, play hard thing. Life for me really was all about performance and moving up and doing more. And I didn't get promoted fast enough at this ad agency, and so I said, "Okay, I'm leaving. You're not going to advance me. I'll move on." And so I applied to Duke University, got in, and went there for 2 years of business school. When I was at Duke, just a quick story that to me was classic in my time at Duke. My friends there gave me a nickname. They called me Lucifer. And I thought that was actually pretty cool. It didn't even occur to me that they were referring to me in the same context as Satan. Never entered my mind. And I went to Duke University, the Blue Devil is the man. That never entered my mind either, you know? So spiritual blindness is real. So they call me Lucifer. I think they were seeing kind of this dual life that I was living. And the hidden life, it was a life of real deception. And I would bring some of them into some of that stuff, of course. But I think they were kind of onto me in a way. Well, at Duke, the most significant thing that happened to me was my second year. It's a two-year full-time program. And in my second year, I got a phone call from my older brother right after the Christmas break. And I bet a lot of you have gotten one of those phone calls that changes your life forever. You get some news and nothing's ever the same, and this was my call. And my brother told me that my dad was having an affair, he was leaving mom, and it was over. I couldn't comprehend this news, and I can't explain to you how hurt I was by that, because dad, even though that anger was there towards dad was still my hero. I was performing to try to please dad and to even be like dad. And all of a sudden, dad is doing something I never thought dad would possibly do. I thought my parents had a perfect marriage. And all of a sudden, no, they don't have a perfect marriage. In fact, dad's having an affair and he's moving on. And I had never really hurt before. I kind of lived in a bubble, I'd say, growing up, a very self-centered bubble. And all of a sudden, that bubble was popped. And it felt like a knife just was plunged through my heart. I didn't know what to do with that pain. I remember just putting my head down in a pillow and crying just like a little boy. And I thought to myself, if I ever needed God, it's now. And I didn't have a clue who God was. I'd gone to church, but it was just a religious exercise. I didn't have any concept of who God was, how to relate to him, or how he might be able to help me in this time where I really needed some help. So what did I do? I just continued to work hard, play hard. That's about all that I knew. That was kind of my gospel in life at that time, right? Just keep performing, work a little harder. Well, second year of business school, that's when we interviewed. I interviewed with all kinds of big companies, and I landed my dream job with Coca-Cola and moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And they put me on the Coca-Cola Classic business. It was 3 years after the introduction of New Coke. The older guys in the room will remember New Coke. Younger guys, ask the older guys later. But it's perhaps the biggest debacle in marketing history in corporate America. And I'll spare you the details on it. But they assigned me to that brand. My first assignment was, it's been 3 years since we introduced New Coke and then withdrew it and brought back the original formula. We got 3 years of data. We want you to look at all the data and tell us what happened. And it was an absolute dream job. And my career at Coca-Cola just took off. After 9 months, I presented to the chief marketing officer of the company, telling him what happened to his biggest brand in his biggest market in the world. And my career was just on fire. The meeting went well. I wasn't the only one presenting, but I was a part of the team, and I just had great success. Success, but no fulfillment. I looked great on the outside, inside filled with anger towards my dad and just pain for my family with just the way the family was just coming undone. And I would just try to run away from my problems as fast as I could through the party life. Had no idea how to deal with the problems in the family, and all that anger that was bottled up, it turned into rage and hatred for my father. And it would spill out, especially when I was partying. And so I started to realize I need some help. But I don't know how to get that. Well, fortunately, Coke started sending some of the young executives to a leadership development program, and they sent me. My time came around. I didn't know what that was about, and they sent me off for 5 days up to North Carolina. And in that time, it was an opportunity for me to really start looking inward and start talking about what was going on in here. And in that time, the biggest thing that came away from that was I came home, and while I was there, I had what I would call a spiritual awakening. I think God just kind of reached down into my total depravity and just kind of touched me and just simply helped me to see there's a spiritual realm. And this is the most important part of life. And I was completely clueless about it. But it touched me. There was just something there. And I thought, I need to figure this out. I need to find out what's going on. And I began this journey of change. I started meeting with a psychologist through this leadership development program that was a part of the package. He would come every month to Coke, and I was all over his calendar. And he talked to me about all the issues with my dad and, my addiction. He started to help me see that, my self-centeredness. And this journey of change began, and it led to all kinds of changes. He helped me to forgive my father. To this day, the hardest thing I've ever done, but he helped me to do that. He helped me to stop drinking and all the drugs and all the party life. And in helping me to see how self-centered I was, he prescribed, Rob, you need to start. One day he said, I want to teach you a new word. This is awesome. He said, I want to teach you a new word. And I thought, that's strange. What's that? He said, the word is others. Is that good? You might want to write that down. That's good. And that had a profound impact on my life because he was right. Man, he just played the perfect card into my life right there. And I was like, you are right. And with that, I made these decisions. I started volunteering. And I had these huge changes going on in my life. And it was all good. I mean, the forgiveness of my dad in itself was so epic. All these things were changing, but I still knew there was something more. I didn't have peace. It wasn't there, and I wanted it. My friends cleared out of my life when I stopped drinking, because it was all based on drinking, right? And the party scene. I had one friend, though, who was kind of in this transition time like me. And his name's Tyler. And Tyler and I would get together, and he was learning about Jesus. And he would tell me about Jesus, and I'd be like, yeah, right, whatever. Let me tell you about the psychology. But we just had this great friendship that we were developing. And one evening, he invited me to go on a retreat with this church group that he was going on. And he said, do you want to go? And I thought to myself, there is no way in hell I want to do that. And all this fear just shot up in me. But I remember the psychologist said, when you're afraid, that's what you need to do. And that had been working. So I said, Tyler, I'm in. I'll go. And he put me on a yellow school bus and sent me off to the Georgia mountains for this retreat. And I went up there, and it was pretty painful, to be honest. People are singing and clapping, and they're happy and everything. And I just like, get me out of here. It was really painful. But I came home from that weekend, and I had one key thought. I made the connection that they talked about this guy, Jesus Christ. And I said, I think that is who I've been looking for to be my mentor. I always thought to myself, where are the guys with the white hair who are doing, they've lived life, they've made the mistakes, and they can teach a guy like me how to live it. And I couldn't find them, right? And I thought, I think this guy, Jesus, might be the guy. I was very curious. And I had a Bible from going to church growing up. I took it out, I started reading the New Testament with two questions. Who is this Jesus? And number two, what does he want with me? That seemed like the other part of the deal. I started going to this church, started making friends. And as I did, I heard these people talking about something very strange. They talked about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I thought, you got to be kidding me. I knew I was in the Bible Belt, and I was on guard for all this stuff, right? I just thought religion was a bunch of nonsense. And I just kind of dismissed that as that's something that they just say, I guess, in the Bible Belt. So I just kind of threw that away. But there was something different about those people, and they had this peace that was very attractive to me. So I thought, you know, maybe there's something here. I don't know. So I was curious. And I started reading the Bible, and I got into a Bible study. That was a big deal. And 1 year later, I was back on that same retreat up in the Georgia mountains. And that weekend, I had a life-changing encounter with Jesus Christ. I heard the gospel that weekend. And that weekend, Jesus, he just pretty much revealed himself to me in a very overt way. And it was to me like a road to Damascus kind of a thing. And as I encountered him just standing there with open arms, I couldn't see him. Actually, it was a light. It was one of those things. I just knew I was in the presence of Jesus. And the words he spoke to me were just about forgiveness, total acceptance for me. And I was just completely covered in his love, like I never knew before in my life. His love just consumed me. And this is what I had wanted, was just acceptance and love. And now I realize that I needed the forgiveness. And so that was when my life changed. I was 30 years old. That's when I found the peace. So I finally found that peace that I had been looking for. Well, the next day, I went back to work at Coca-Cola, back into corporate America, but now is this, you know, oh my gosh, what just happened to me? And, you know, encounter with Jesus. And my new challenge was, what is this new life, and how do I live this out? Well, my focus at Coke, I just started to realize this is a dark place spiritually. You know, I got tuned into the spiritual realm that I had discovered a couple years prior to that. And I thought to myself, I think God needs light in this place. It's a dark place. He needs light. And that's why I'm here. So I kind of found a purpose. And as I started to grow, I was really into the Bible. And what grabbed me more than anything was the Great Commission, where Jesus said, go and make disciples of all nations. I'm a strategic thinker. And when I was at Coke, you know, I was in the brand group. We did the strategy to build the brands for Coca-Cola. And I just kind of think strategically. And so for me, a man's, you know, final words are close to it. There's a lot of strategy to pay attention, especially when this man claims to be the Son of God. And he said, go and make disciples of all the nations. And I said, okay, I think that's pretty significant. Now, what does that mean, to go and make disciples? And I was going to this church, and I'm looking around, and I'm talking to them and all their leadership. I couldn't find anything that I thought really lined up with what it looked like in that year of time to make disciples. So I started hanging around a CBMC group. There was one guy at the church named John, and he invited me to this breakfast. And these guys were talking about making disciples. And as I listened to them, they talked about Operation Timothy. I thought, you know what? These guys seem to be onto something that seems legitimate, of actually meeting with a man, imparting your life and the life of Christ to him. So I started hanging around those guys. And as I did, I came to realize that God wants me to make disciples. But first, I thought, you know, I think I probably need to be discipled first. That seems pretty basic. So I started to pray. And I said, God, I don't know how you're going to do this, but would you send a man into my life who could disciple me? And it was about 2 weeks later, I went to that breakfast, and I met Dave Hill. Actually, I had met Dave before, but had been around him, okay? Around him enough where my view was, this man is a spiritual giant. And when I shook his hand that morning, I felt like God said to me, this is the man that you have been asking me for. And I thought to myself, there is no way that this spiritual giant would have time for a mess like me. And so I pretty much just threw that away. But I was trying to figure out how to date a woman from a Christian perspective. And the guys in that group said, you got to talk to Dave. He's the love doctor. Love doctor's in the back row there if anyone has any questions on that topic. So I met with Dave, and he helped me, you know, with that relationship. And then we just started talking about other stuff. And before you know it, we're studying the book of James. We read this amazing book on spiritual leadership. And Dave was discipling me, and I was absolutely taken by that. Dave modeled a biblical life for me. What I was reading in the Bible, I started to see it in this man, and it was powerful for me. And one of the things that Dave said to me regularly, he would say, Rob, there are two things that are eternal, the word of God and the souls of men. And that's what you need to give your life to. Those two things, that's what God values. And I really got a hold of that. And back then, I was so taken by Christ, I was serving in all kinds of ways. I was meeting with kids in the inner city, teaching them to read. I was doing street evangelism. I was doing youth ministry. I led Bible studies, all kinds of stuff. But I never was satisfied with those. I always thought there's something else God wants me to do. And I didn't quite know what it was. Well, I went to a conference as a new believer, a CBMC conference, kind of like this. And at that conference, I heard about 2 Timothy 2:2. And a lot of you guys know that verse. The things you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men who will also be qualified to teach others. It's what Paul wrote to his spiritual son, Timothy. And what Paul was doing in Timothy's life was Paul went deep in imparting Christ to Timothy. And he exhorted Timothy to do the same with other men with a view to four generations: Paul, Timothy, reliable men, and others. And at this conference, they had four guys who had done this in their life up on the stage. And to me, when I see something like that, I can really get it. And to see these four lives and to hear the stories, it made a great impact on me. And as I came away from that conference, I felt like God was saying to me, Rob, this is what I want you to do. This is the most important thing I have for you. That other stuff you're doing is fine, but I want you to meet with one man, just like Dave has been doing for you. That's it. I want you to meet with a man, and I will multiply it. You don't worry about that. I'll do it, and I want to do it to four generations, just like you're seeing in Dave's life. This Great Commission finally made sense to me. I was finally starting to wrap my mind around it. It was all about following Jesus' example, which is really pretty simple, of just going deep with a few men. When you strip away the Gospels, that's what we see. Jesus imparting his life to just to a few, him going off the scene, and then him multiplying his life through these men. And I thought, I think this is what the Great Commission is. This is how the Lord revealed this to me, and he invited me into this calling of being a disciple and making disciples. And I caught a vision for my life at this point. And I'm going to talk tomorrow about the specific vision, but this is the heart of it. So, still at Coca-Cola, I had been there for 3.5 years when I came to Christ. As I grew, my passion for the kingdom, it just increased. And my passion for Coca-Cola decreased, which is really saying something, because, man, I loved working there. Sometimes I'd be there till 4 and 5 in the morning. And I'd go home for a couple hours, and I'd be back at 7 in the morning. And we were doing some really great things, but my passion started to wane for that, and my energy started to be outside of Coca-Cola. And I started to experience these real tensions in my work. There was just a lack of fulfillment with all this work that I was doing, and a desire to serve God more fully. There was a lack of freedom. Work responsibilities, I kept getting promoted. Work responsibilities just went up and up, and the freedom came down. And back then was when the technology creep was really happening. Now it's full on. Back then it was just starting, you know, going home, voicemails, emails you got to follow up on, and not being able to get away from that, and how that would just crash my freedom. And so I was feeling this tension, and I was thinking, gee, maybe I need to get a job somewhere else. Maybe I shouldn't stay here. And about that time, I had lunch with my friend Roger. And Roger and I explained this to him and this burden that I had. And Roger said, you know, Rob, God is the creator of all things. Don't you think if he wants you to have a new job that he can handle that? And that just really made sense to me. And I said, you know what? I think you're right, Roger. I just need to let go of this. I need to trust God with this, just do my job, and just wait on God. If he wants to make a change, let him bring it to me. I don't need to initiate that. So after 2 years out of as a believer, out of the blue, God initiated. And I got a phone call with an opportunity to interview in the global marketing group. I had spent, up to that point, about 5 years in domestic marketing, all kinds of marketing, U.S. Soft drink brands for Coke. And now they're asking me to interview for a global marketing job. And when I went to Coke, I thought, if I could do global marketing, I could do this my whole career. You know, Coke's the number one brand in the world. And it's in almost every nation. And I just thought that would be amazing to learn all these different cultures, to travel the world. It just seemed like where I wanted to go. Now I had a chance to interview for one of those jobs. I interviewed all day with all these vice presidents, and then at the end of the day, I interviewed with the chief marketing officer of the company, Sergio Zeman. And before that interview, I prayed and I said, Lord, would you give me an opportunity to witness to Sergio about you? Pretty scary prayer. But I just felt like, God, this is why I'm here, to be a light in the darkness. So I asked God to do it. And God opened the door for me. And I'll share that story with you another time. But God opened this door for me to witness to Sergio in that interview. And as I did, I knew I had either just destroyed my career at Coca-Cola, or he was thinking, this guy has the guts that I need in this job. And the job I was interviewing for was to be the worldwide brand manager for the Coca-Cola brand. And so he needed somebody with some guts. Well, I got the job the next day. And stepped right into that. And as I did, they moved me from the USA building into the corporate tower. All new relationships, constant travel. And as I stepped into that new job, I was looking for where God was working. Because I knew that God had me at Coke for a reason. And it wasn't to build the soft drink empire, right? It was to build his kingdom. So God, where are you working in this new role that you've put me in? And in this job, the lifestyle, it was pretty strenuous. They had me traveling all over the world, and it was a fast pace. I was in Brazil, Tokyo, London, Toronto, Bangkok. I remember when I was in Bangkok, in places I've never been before, I flew in, I got there, I was in traffic for about 3 hours. We had this research that went on until after midnight. I got to a hotel, stayed in this amazing hotel, and I had to get up at about 4 a.m. to get back to the airport to fly out. So I got to the hotel after midnight. I knew I had to leave at 4, and I thought, this is my slice I've got in Bangkok, and I'm in this amazing hotel. I gotta stay up and at least enjoy this, you know? So I forced myself to stay up for about 2 hours, slept for about 2 hours, and then off to the airport and back home. What a life. And then, you know, got back to Atlanta, inbox had piled up, all that work to be done, laundry to be done, you know, try to keep my life on track a little bit. It was not a great life, guys. It sounds great, but it was the pits. And I started to get frustrated with that, especially since with all that movement, constant movement, I was not able to build any relationships. Even when I was stationary in Atlanta, relationship doors were closed, and I know God's the one who opens those doors. And so I started talking to him about this. And I remember that that time I was reading through Exodus, and I was reading about God taking the people out of Egypt and taking them into the promised land. And I just resonated with that. And as I read that day after day, I started to think, Lord, I think you're calling me to leave Coca-Cola. That it's Egypt for me. It's a place of bondage. And you're calling me to leave. And I thought, I mean, you clearly put me in this job. I witnessed to the chief marketing officer of the company, right? You clearly, and yet I still got the job. You put me in this job. And now you're calling me to leave? And I said, Lord, if this is really you telling me this, you've got to make this so clear to me that I can't miss it. And so I left that in the Lord's court. A couple weeks later, I went to the office. First thing in the 7 o'clock, we had our 15 top countries coming in, and we were going to train them on how to market Coca-Cola in their context. We had been working very hard towards this meeting. Got to the office, got on an elevator, because I had to go to another building for the meeting. Elevator is on its way down, and the elevator got stuck. And I thought to myself, I've never heard of anyone getting stuck in an elevator. This is really weird. It makes, you know, kind of a cute sitcom show or something, right? That scene in an elevator or a commercial or something. But I knew nobody who got stuck in an elevator. I hit the buttons, tried to get the elevator to loose or something. Nothing worked. I got on the intercom with security, and they said, try this and that. Nothing worked. And they said, well, we'll come over right away to get you out of there. And I said, well, two things. First, can you call this conference room and tell them my situation and tell them to start the meeting without me? I don't know when I'll be there. And secondly, take your time. I've been really busy lately, and I could use a little quiet time. And I meant it. I really meant it. And I sat down on the floor of this elevator, and I said, Lord, you are in control of all things, including this elevator. And I don't know what's going on here, but you've got my full attention. And I'm just going to sit here, and I just want to listen to you. I sat down on the floor. I just closed my eyes, and I'm like, Lord, what are you trying to say to me? And one of the most unusual things that's ever happened to me happened. You read in the book of Acts how Peter had this trance. He was on the top of the roof, and the sheet came down with all the animals on it. Some translations call it a vision or a trance. Well, this is what happened to me. I'm sitting on the floor of this elevator, and with my eyes closed, and it's like a videotape started to roll. It was this vision I had. And in this vision, the elevator came loose. It started to slowly move down, and as it moved down, God said to me, you're in a box, a small box, and this is symbolic of your years at Coca-Cola, and you've been here almost 7 years, and 7 is my number of completion, and I'm taking you out of here. The elevator came to a rest on the bottom floor, the doors open, and I stepped out, not into the Coca-Cola lobby, but I stepped out into what to me is kind of what Psalm 23 looks like. It was just green grass, rolling hills, pools of water, beautiful blue sky, white puffy clouds, incredible sunshine, just rolling and just going forever and ever and ever. So inviting. And God said, this is what I have for you. And at that very moment, the security guys came over the intercom and said, Mr. Ketterer, we're going to have you out of here very soon. And in that moment, I realized, God, it's true what you've been saying to me. you are taking, this is Egypt, and you are taking me out. And I couldn't believe it. I've been hearing that right. I've been hearing your voice, and you just answered my prayer to make this abundantly clear. In the following days, as I continued to talk to the Lord about this, I realized, Lord, you told me that I'm leaving, but you didn't say when. When? When are we leaving? And I just kept asking God, when? Well, it was a couple weeks later. I was in my office. I was about to meet with my boss. And I did something that I rarely do. You know the old take the Bible and just kind of flip it open and look at a verse, that thing? We all do it. Well, I did this, and I looked down, and my eyes went right to John 14:31. Jesus said, come now, let us leave. Honestly. And these words, as I read them, they just burned in my heart. Come now, let us leave. And I was like, now? And it's like the Lord said, now. Now, like I'm about to go talk to my boss. You want me to resign now? Uh-huh. Now. Got up, went to meet with her. Sat down in her office. She looked at me and she said, what is it? And I said, well, I do have something I want to talk to you about, but why don't we cover your agenda first? And she said, no, what's going on? I can tell there's something up with you. And I said, really? Why don't we go through your agenda first? She insisted, so I said, okay, I'm resigning. And she couldn't believe it. She said, I know you've been under a lot of pressure lately. Why don't you take the rest of the week off? You know. And I said, I'll be happy to take the rest of the week off, but my mind is made up. And so I did. I took the week off. And that was really good, because in that time, the Lord said, I want you to leave well. I want you to really leave with a good testimony. And so I went and met with her, and I said, Vanita, I am leaving. However, I don't want to put you in a bind. I hadn't been in the job that long, so it was shocking that I was going to leave. And I said, I'll stay in this job as long as you want me to, within reason, because I'm ready to go now. But I'll let you set the date. If you want me to hire someone and train them until you're comfortable, I don't want this to be a burden on you. And she really appreciated that. So it was a step of faith. And it was just a few weeks later, she set the date. And the date that she gave me, I looked at the calendar, it was exactly 7 years and 7 days since I had started the company. And the Lord had said to me in the elevator, 7 is my number of completion. So just total confirmation, the way that God was in all those details and communicated that to me, it blew my mind. So I left Coca-Cola. People couldn't believe I was leaving. Nobody left the company back then. It was still just a money machine. I left all kinds of options on the table. I didn't even want to look at them. It's like the Lord told me to leave. I'm out of here. I don't even need to count up how much money I'm leaving behind. I'm gone. I left, and when I left, the Lord gave me one instruction. He said, I want you to have margin in your life to make disciples and to reach the lost. That was it. No, here's what I want you to do professionally. None of that. When I left, I didn't even know how beaten down I was from 7 years in corporate America on a fast track. And so it was a few months of kind of what I call detox, just kind of getting that out of my system. And then I had started doing some creative writing prior to leaving, and I was really energized by that. And I got some great feedback, and I wondered, I wonder if this might be what I do professionally. So I just started taking a lot of time to write creatively. I wrote children's books. I wrote some books that I thought were a good example of what I could do. I pursued publishers and did networking to get them in front of people. All doors stayed closed for that. And I started to conclude, this is not what you're calling me to. But then it was reality time. It was like, okay, Lord, you told me to leave. You didn't tell me what to do. You want me to work. I need to work. What do you want me to do? And that was a really difficult time in the wilderness, just crying out to God to find out, what do you want me to do? Well, slowly there were some little projects, little consulting things that popped up, things that if my colleagues down at Coca-Cola knew what I was doing, I would have been embarrassed if they knew the little things that I was working on. But as I prayed about it, God said, whoever is faithful in the little things, to him will be given more. So I thought, okay, I need to humble myself and just do these little things and trust God with it. Well, these little consulting projects, they started to add up. And over time, a real breakthrough came where I was introduced to the CEO of a consulting firm, a small consulting firm in Atlanta. I met with him, we hit it off. He introduced me to his chairman. They wanted me to work full time. And I said, guys, I appreciate it, but I'm sorry. That's not the vision God's given me. I need to, and they're believers. They understood. I said, I need to have margin in my life. And they said, okay, well, would you do projects for us? And I said, I'd love to do projects for you. And so that the business really started to ramp up. I started working very closely with the CEO. And in that, I learned how to be a consultant. I learned all kinds of stuff to launch me into what has become a consulting career. That put me on this entirely new trajectory for my life, which has continued to this day, 23 years later. That step of faith of leaving Coca-Cola, spurred on by the vision of God, has put me on this whole different trajectory. And in that time, God has given me the margin, and I've had to make some decisions to keep the margin, believe me, but God has been faithful to help me keep that margin and to give me the work and to bring this whole new career out of the ground for me. I have my own business. I work out of my home. I've never had an employee. I keep it really simple because I want to keep God's original vision of keeping margin in my life to give my life away. My work has been an incredible blessing, and to me, it's just amazing that I get to have a profession where I'm making contributions in the marketplace. In the marketplace, I'm able to connect professionally with other men. And that, as you can imagine, just flows right into ministry as I meet men and as I'm relevant as a businessman. So that's what I've been up to for 23 years. I count it an amazing privilege, and the freedom that God has given me in that time has been remarkable to me. And tomorrow, I want to talk tomorrow mainly about what I've seen coming out of that decision to leave Coke and to have margin in my life. And as I do, I want to talk about fruit, okay? The Lord says that he's glorified by fruit in our lives. It's incredibly important for all of us. God wants all of us to have tremendous amounts of fruit in our lives, all for his glory, right? And so that's what I want to talk about tomorrow. And so tonight was just kind of tee that up, and I'm going to build on this tomorrow. So guys, you guys have been amazingly attentive. I really appreciate it. It's great to look out and not to see a lot of people falling asleep. So thanks, and that's all I got for tonight. And John, I'll hand it off back to you.